WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. When a character you love dies in a feature film, you can reassure yourself that it's only a movie. But when Tom Joslin dies in the new film Silver Lake Life, you're defenseless. Joslin was a filmmaker and teacher. Silver Lake Life is his video journal of the last chapter of his life after he was diagnosed with AIDS. He often turned the camera on his lover of 22 years, Mark Massey, who also had AIDS. When Tom got too sick to set up the camera, Mark took over. He even filmed Tom's death in 1990. After Mark died several months later, the videotapes were inherited by Peter Friedman, a close friend and former student of Tom's. Friedman edited down the 40 hours of videotape to a 90-minute documentary. It won the Grand Jury Prize at this year's Sundance Film Festival. Tomorrow night, you can see it on Public TV's POV series. I asked Peter Friedman to describe the range of material in the raw tape he received.
It was primarily a diary of daily life, so there were a lot of, and it was shot with a camcorder, a kind of high-end version of a home video camera. And so it was something that was easy to film. It didn't require a lot of setup. And for someone who's sick, nothing's easy. Just opening the case and taking out this little camera was sometimes too much for Tom to do because, I mean, there were days when he couldn't even get out of bed. But relatively speaking, it was easy enough to do so that he could take it into all kinds of situations and film in a very spontaneous way. So whenever, he might film themselves going out to dinner at a local restaurant, or he might teaching his class at USC, its film class, these are some of the things that did not make it into the final tape. But also there were the trips to the doctor, and there were the kind of intimate moments around the house, and there were the views of the neighborhood, and there was a trip back home to visit the family. And there was also other film work that Tom had done that he left behind that was provided source material for me ultimately.
I want to ask you about some of the scenes that you decided to include after reviewing about 40 hours of video. There's a scene, and this comes early on in the film, of Mark and Tom just lying in bed talking. They're talking to the camera, which is, you know, set up in the room, and they're looking at each other on the video monitor. And Tom notices, through looking at the monitor, that there's a new lesion on Mark's eyelid.
Right.
It's a really interesting scene. Can you tell me why you chose to include that one?
Well, I chose to include that for a number of reasons, one of which was the fact that because very often Mark was filming Tom or Tom was filming Mark, there are very few scenes in which they were both on camera together. Mm-hmm. And so Tom had this camera set up by his bedside and Mark had come and lay down beside him. And so the moment expressed their ease with each other, their ease with the camera, the way in which their situation, being, you know, people with AIDS, was part of their life, but not all of their life. So to me, it expressed their intimacy, their ease, their camera consciousness, and the fact that they were people with AIDS and dealing with that too, all in a half a minute.
There's a really nice moment in the film where Mark is kissing Tom goodnight, and Tom says something like, looking into the camera, says, "I bet you people don't get great kisses like this," something along those lines. It's
right.
A really nice moment. You know, as intimate as the film gets, what isn't in there is anything more sexual than that. And I was wondering if they ever went that far with the camera.
Yes, they did, but not in the course of Silver Lake Life. I mean, Tom had been making personal films and using his life and his life with Mark as the stuff of his work off and on throughout the time I knew him, which was 15 years. So back in the 70s, there's a scene in Black Star, which is the film that's excerpted in Silver Lake Life, of Mark and Tom in bed together. And it's sort of staged a little bit as a comic scene because they're surrounded by piles and piles of film. And they're having a discussion in bed about how film always comes between them and Tom's filmmaking activities. It was very kind of 70s self-conscious film style. Tom turns toward the camera in the middle of it and says, "I hate this stuff in cinema verite." Forte, you know? And so, you know, in the same way he turned toward the camera and made a little joke in that scene in Silver Lake Life, he was very comfortable with the camera, and he was very sort of, he had a kind of quality of being a kind of natural kind of entertainer, sort of a persona that he had kind of cultivated.
When Tom got too sick to keep filming, Mark took over as the cameraman. How do you think that the tone changes when Mark takes over?
Well, I think that Mark's focus was more on Tom, and Tom included himself in his focus, but it was the focus of the film went from Tom kind of looking at his life and the world around him to Mark kind of looking at Tom. And so the world was shrinking in the way that, you know, when people become sicker and their capacities, their physical capacities become more limited, their world shrinks in a sense because their ability to go out into the world is diminished. So Mark really saw himself as kind of doing for Tom what Tom couldn't do for himself, as much as kind of expressing his point of view about it. He was keeping the film going in the same way that he was doing many other things to keep daily life going. The filmmaking was part of daily life, and it was something that needed to be continued in the same way that many other things needed to be continued to get through the day.
There's an incredibly moving moment. I mean, I don't think I could do justice to how moving it is when Mark is videotaping Tom just after Tom died. Tom's body is in bed. Mark is weeping off camera, describing Tom's death. And he says to Tom, "You're so beautiful." And, you know, you're watching this movie and you're thinking, yes, he really is. He really is beautiful. And what you're seeing is just the shell of a person. I mean, I'm sure he looks like a Holocaust victim. I mean, he's just skeletal. His face is deformed by the lesions from the Kaposi's. And you look at him, you say, yeah, he's really, really beautiful. What was your reaction when you saw that? And you must have had this kind of like personal reaction and then filmmaker reaction all at the same time.
I thought that was one of the most, if not the most powerful, moving moments I'd ever seen on film or video in my life. Mm-hmm. But I wasn't able to tell how much I was affected, how much that was just because it was someone I knew and loved. Mm-hmm. I didn't know that other people would react that way at the time. But I do think, you know, as you say, you said to yourself, yes, he is beautiful. And that's because you saw in him in that moment not only the physical deformities that had ravaged him, but the person you had come to know in the previous hour of the film.
That's exactly right. I mean, honestly, when you watch the movie, you really feel like they're your friends because you've gotten to know them so well because they've showed you so much about themselves.
Well, they were my friends, and they, and as I think I mentioned, I have many other friends who are sick or who have died, and so that experience is so difficult and so prevalent and so important that one of the purposes of the film is to for people who maybe haven't had that experience to know a little bit about what it feels like, you know, at least those people who are willing to accept the challenge of going through it. And of course there are many, many people out there who have been through it and who are going through it all the time. And for those people, it was, I think, Tom's wish and certainly mine to make a document which was true and faithful to the essence of, or part of the essence of what that experience is about.
Some people would think that some things are just too personal to be filmed and shown to the public, and that one of those things would be a film of somebody at the moment of death and thereafter. Did you have any reservations at all about putting that part into the movie?
None whatsoever, because for a number of reasons. One is that those images around Tom's death were filmed by Mark, and it was the most tragic moment of his life until that time, and yet he saw fit to put it on camera, and he would not have done so if he didn't think Tom's thought it fit. So there was no voyeurism or exploitation, because there was no distance between the filmmaker and the person having the experience. You know, I mean, it was all a very intimate act.
My guest is Peter Friedman, editor of the new film Silver Lake Life, a video journal of Tom Joslin and his lover Mark Massey in the last part of their lives before they died of AIDS. It will be shown tomorrow night on the public television series POV. More after this break. This is Fresh Air. My guest Peter Friedman edited the new film Silver Lake Life. You shot some footage of Mark after Tom died.
Right.
How much of Mark's story did you consider telling for the film? How much did you want to, like, follow his story after?
Well, even when I shot that interview with Mark, I wasn't entirely sure that it was going to be combined with the footage of Silver Lake Life, or that I was going to end up with Silver Lake Life, or, I mean, you know, it's hard to describe how uncertain things were and how they kind of happened just the way they happened and not according to anybody's plan, really. So in retrospect, I like to think that, you know, Silver Lake Life was at its core Tom Joslin's personal story told from his point of view, and the film exists because he decided to make it and expressed his vision and exercised his will and his ability. And so the lack of a storyteller to tell the story of what happened to Mark after Tom was gone reflects the loss of Tom. Tom was the primary storyteller, and he wasn't there to tell the story.
There's excerpts in Silver Lake of an earlier documentary that Tom made, another personal documentary about being gay, and he interviews his parents for that earlier film, and you could tell they're really uncomfortable with him being gay. I mean, his father particularly just can't deal with it, can't deal with Tom's lover, Mark. And that film was shown on some PBS stations.
Right.
Years ago. How did Tom's parents react to this new film, which is about to be shown on many PBS stations?
Tom's parents were shown the film a couple of months ago by Tom's brother, Whitey. And Tom's mother asked Whitey to call the newspaper where they live in New Hampshire and invited a journalist over. And the result was a big two-page article in the New Hampshire newspaper, because she wanted to let her extended family who lived around the state know that this had happened. And her attitude was, it was really, I mean, for something for which I am profoundly grateful that she reacted the way that she did, which was that she was extremely happy that her son's dream was being realized, and also expressed hope that it would help somehow, that it would help other people who are going through this, or it would help educate people to prevent them from having to go through this. So, you know, even back in 76, when they were expressing their discomfort on camera in Black Star, they had still agreed to be on camera to express their discomfort. So there was a kind of implicit acceptance of what was going on, or at least a willingness to help Tom do what he wanted to do, even if they didn't entirely understand everything he did.
I couldn't help wondering, watching the movie, if you had lost a lover to AIDS.
I lost a very close friend of mine a month ago who had at one time been a lover, I have not been through it in the way that Mark and Tom were, in terms of somebody I'd live with for a long time or anything like that. No, but I have lost a number of people who are very, very close to me. It's not the same thing, but AIDS has certainly been a constant and massive presence in my personal daily life since the mid-80s, without any period since then where there wasn't somebody in my life who was sick.
What importance did Tom have in your life as a friend and as a teacher?
Tom was probably one of the most important people in my life, period, particularly since I met him when I was barely 18 years old. It was my first year of college. I didn't know who I was or what I wanted to be, and I was also a deeply closeted young man struggling with my own sexuality and struggling to deny my homosexuality. And so Tom was somebody who, I mean, I saw Black Star my first semester of school, and it was the first time I had ever been exposed to any kind of open discussion of homosexuality, much less on the screen.
That's the film that he made about himself, the first film he made.
Yes, the ones that I used excerpts from in Silver Lake Life, yeah. And so it was just an incredibly important experience for me as a young gay man growing up, you know, with no role models and no real knowledge that it was possible to live a healthy, happy life as a gay man, or is it possible to be open and honest about who you were and build your life around that, to have somebody come along who represented that possibility. And gay people so often are denied that, as we're denied so many other things that heterosexuals are so accustomed to that they don't even know they have. And so that was a profound experience for me. And Tom, yeah, I didn't go to college knowing I wanted to get into film. Tom was just somebody who I really wanted to be around as much as I could, to sort of he sort of represented to me someone who had found some answers about life that I wanted to find. And so I hung around him. I took his classes. I became his assistant on his film projects, and I gradually got to know Mark and became close friends with him too. And I guess because of the period of time I met him, which was I was 18, it was just a tremendously important experience for me. So there's no question in my mind that I got into film because of him, and that I was able to develop an identity as a self-accepting, healthy, openly gay person as a result of Mark and Tom's example.
When you were editing the film of the last part of Tom's life, did you hear Tom's voice in your head kind of giving you advice about what to use or what not use? Did you feel guided by him at all?
No. See, that's one of the things that I spent 2 months looking at the footage and trying to evaluate what kind of a film there might be in there. And that was one of the things I had to get over in order to make the film.
Mm-hmm.
Because what I inherited was like an archive of the last year of their lives. It wasn't a rough cut. There wasn't a script. It was just, there was a million directions it could have gone in, and it wasn't self-evident what kind of film there was in there. And so the film was difficult enough, but if I had constantly been wondering what would he have done here, what would he have done here, especially since he was my mentor and somebody who kind of loomed large in my personal history and esteem, I would have been paralyzed. So I had to sort of accept the fact that he was gone, that this was an unfinished project, that I had to really kind of dig in and just take charge of it and do what I wanted to do. So in a sense, I kind of had a put a sign on the door of the editing room that said, "No ghosts allowed."
Peter Friedman, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Peter Friedman edited the film Silver Lake Life. It will be shown tomorrow night on the public TV series POV.